Oh, the shape that will get. If you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock this?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions I don't know. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Team 33. We're also on Facebook, also on iTunes, and you can find every episode on offtheball.com. Later this week, hopefully, we'll be chatting to Sid Lowe. He's in town for a Spanish football podcast special at Liberty Hall. So if you want to head along to that, that's on the Wednesday. But Ireland are playing while we're recording here. It's coming towards the end of the first half. Ireland 1-0 up against Georgia. So if you're listening to this later in the week, just ignore all the match updates and just listen
the
to everything.
The tennis ball protest has already
yes,
taken place.
Yes, the tennis ball protest has happened. Joe Coffey witnessed that on the telly that we have up here. Derek Ryan's also here.
Hello. Derek, you must be upset you didn't get to go to the match in the end.
Yes, I actually wouldn't mind seeing all the tennis balls at the very least and a decent goal as well. Yeah, I was supposed to be going earlier on, but I didn't get a chance to go in the end. I kind of am a bit, you know, torn about the whole, you know, fans who are not going because of they disagree with the whole FAI thing as opposed to supporting the team.
I'm all about the boycott.
I'm kind of torn because you support the team all the time, or do you? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mick McCarthy, for example, saying, yeah, protest, but don't protest at the match because it's going to affect the performance.
Well,
where else are you going to protest, though?
Yeah, you know, we'll just introduce Jonathan Higgins, who's here as well.
Yeah, I'm here with my tennis ball as
well. It was slightly more important than the average tennis ball.
Fresh from meeting all your boyhood heroes at Anfield.
Yeah, it was quite an experience. I think the Milan guys probably even grabbed more attention. They are some fine-looking Italian gentlemen.
What Milan fella? This was what? So Liverpool Legends versus Milan?
Yeah.
In aid of?
It's for the Liverpool Foundation, so it's the local charities, and I believe a chunk went to the Milan version of their charity work as well. The word legend is kind of thrown around, especially in this day and age, but some of the names on show were incredible. And to see like players that you would have idolized as a kid, and particularly like the man, you know, seeing Kaká in full flow.
Yeah, who's on the Milan team?
Perlog, Cafu, Dida, Rui Costa, Inzaghi. Like the names are just
really. Kaká be class.
And what about Liverpool? Imagine, it's hard to believe that Kaká's a legend. Like, you know, that's the kind of.
What age is he?
He's. Is he 36 or 37?
I would have guessed mid 30s.
He joined Real the same summer as Ronaldo.
I always remember watching RT and them having a big debate about who the best player is in the world. And Eamon Duffy says, I'll tell you who the best player is. It's Kaká. And I would safely say after that, Kaká basically disappeared. And in fairness, he was right at the time. Kaká was the one everyone was talking about at the time.
Was.
Do you remember that huge story going around that Man City were signing Kaká?
Yep.
And instead they ended up with Robinho.
Robinho.
But the big thing was that they were going signing Kaká, and I think.
But wasn't the whole thing they didn't want to sign Kaká? Well, people were like, we don't need Kaká, we have Stephen Ireland.
That was the story as well.
Because Stephen Ireland that summer was actually quality. That season was actually quality,
But they were signing Kaká, and they were offering him wages of $500,000 a week, which. I'm pretty sure Ronaldo's probably. Sure, isn't Aaron Ramsey going to be on that? But this was 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, he was a genuine superstar of the game. He was one of those players that you would watch the Champions League highlights or whatever, and he would have scored a worldie.
He is 36 on the ball, by the way.
Once his pace went, he was kind of done.
Yeah, he was the type of player, he was unbelievable. Like, if you're talking about players that are the best in the world, he was unbelievable there for about 2 or 3 years. And then quickly, once Messi and Ronaldo.
Once he went to Real.
Pretty much.
He was a disaster at Real, and it was because of injuries, like you say. He got injuries pretty early on. He was the world record fee for about, I don't know, 6 weeks between him and Ronaldo signing. They joined around the same time.
And then Messi.
Or is it Zidane?
Well, Messi. No.
Ronaldo, wasn't it?
Yeah, because Zidane, the world record.
Yeah, it was well gone.
Sorry. It was 0-1. Yeah,
48 million or something.
No, it was Ronaldo. Him and Ronaldo joined around the same time. And I think he was 50 odd mil, and then Ronaldo was 80 mil or something.
And then Messi and Ronaldo took over and swapped back and forth to best player in the world accolades then.
Do you remember Kaká at Old Trafford against United when he was at AC? Around 2007-08, and one of the goals he scored, he just split straight through the United defence when United had a very strong defence. just incredible. His movement and his pace,
defense splitting balls. Yeah. Like, even go back to the 05 final, Crespo's second goal to put them 2-0. Like, literally picks up the ball and cuts the whole Liverpool defense apart. Sweeping ball through. Crespo just has to think it over then. But yeah, no, it was an incredible occasion. The mix zone was a bit intense afterwards, to say the least.
Intense in fun or
in terms of volume of people, it was jammed. So it was a bit of a scrum to try.
Was anyone who was allowed in afterwards?
So there was a lot more of the doors were a lot more open than you would have on a regular match day. There's a lot more, particularly of the fan media organisations as well. Yeah. A lot of them were in there as well. And it was just a game that captured a lot of attention. It was a full house at Anfield as well.
Were most giving of their time, or were they trying to get through? Or
I was a little bit disappointed with the Milan. I was hoping to get a couple of the Milan guys, but they pretty much were kind of in and out of the gap pretty much straight away. But most of the Liverpool guys, particularly towards the end, the younger generation, I got to speak to Sam Hippie, Luis Garcia, Robbie Fowler, and of course Jason McAteer as well.
I'm sure Robbie would have been in demand. Robbie Fowler.
He was. He tried to run a little bit. You know, one of the guys was joking that that was the quickest he'd ran all day, was trying to get through the mix zone. But they were very obliging, and I think it's great to see. Sometimes, particularly modern football, is criticised, often rightly so, but to see such a big crowd, to see everyone so generous of the time for a charity event as well. And of course, we have the big charity game coming up pretty soon.
It's April 12th tomorrow. Sean Cox.
And this is Ireland Legends versus
Liverpool Legends. Liverpool, so I think that Jason said it in the little snippet I had gotten to speak to him afterwards as well. That's really the focus now, just to try and get a big crowd here.
And of course, I have no doubt that they will get a big crowd.
Yeah, no, it would be great. It would be great to see.
A lot of work has to go on to get the crowd to come.
Absolutely,
that'll happen.
If anyone's listening, I'm sure you can still get your tickets on Ticketmaster check it out. We'll put out a link to the page or whatever.
A very worthy cause.
Absolutely, because that could have been any of us at a football game. I'm sure it'll be a great occasion, and hopefully we'll.
Yeah, actually, before we get to anything else, anyway, we might as well play your medley of Liverpool legends that you came across.
So it's a bit of a mixed bag. Yeah. It starts off with a chat with Sammy Hippie. He kind of speaks about, it's almost like deja vu again, like the certain things that you're, I'm paraphrasing here now, but this is my version, the certain things you're guaranteed in life, that's debt, tax, and a late Stevie G winner. Gerrard scored the winner right at the end. Liverpool went 2-0 up. After Robbie Fowler scored in the first half, a low little flick, then CC made it 2-0.
CC?
Yes, CC was there.
There's Liverpool legends.
That's a debate for
he's a Champions League winner.
He's a Champions League winner, he scored a penalty in the Champions League final.
Vladimir Schmitzer, isn't he? But that doesn't mean he's a Liverpool legend. I guess it does. Jonathan Greening's a United legend because he won the Champions League.
David May as well, because he was in all the photos in 99. Perlo made a 2-2 with a scorcher of a free kick. Before the late Stevie G winner, Sammy talks about that. He talks about a lot of the team, obviously, were quite anxious to talk about Liverpool, this current team. Now, it was a team of legends, but a lot of the focus was on the current day team and what they thought of Liverpool's expectations. Robbie Fowler speaks about that. Luis Garcia speaks about the enjoyment of being on the pitch, and of course the Liverpool. And then there's a nice little kind of snippet at the end where it sets. We spoke a little bit, given a little teaser for the Liverpool Ireland Legends game, but Jason McAteer is a bit of a word for our own Kelvin Ban. So good little listen there, and something definitely to look forward to.
Yep. So here it is.
How good, Sammy, was it to be back on the pitch there, playing against the Milan Legends and a late Stevie Gerrard winner? That must feel just like old times, was it?
Yeah, Stevie was carrying us like in the past as well, and he seems to carry us now as well. But it was great. It's a long time ago that I played in this kind of tempo, so it was a bit maybe not a shock for me, but I was a bit surprised at how quick the game was actually. So. It's always better to win than lose, but I think the days that we have to win are over. I enjoyed, and I hope all the players who participated on the field, that they enjoyed. And I think the most important thing is that we We gathered thanks for all the fans who came here, that we gathered a lot of money for the LFC Foundation, and it's a great cause, and it's great that we heard before the game that that a lot of the money comes to the local goes to the local community, and that has always been very important for the club, and it seemed to be important still. So it's we give our time for this great cause, and I enjoyed it. So,
are Liverpool going to do it if we fast forward to the current team? How do you think Liverpool's hopes are for the rest of the remainder of the season?
I think it's gonna go until the last day of the season, we will fight, and we can't lose many points because City won't lose many, but hopefully the red side of Manchester can help us a little.
Well, look, I wouldn't sort of stand here and say, yeah, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. I think they've got a great chance, but look, City have got a great chance as well. I think there's going to be, you know, ebb and flow towards the end of the season. I think there will be twists and turns. I'm happy where we are now, albeit we are, you know, on top with, you know, maybe playing a game more. But I think I'd prefer to be there as opposed to, you know, playing catch-up, because, you know, it puts you in a bit of a precarious position, don't you, if you're playing catch-up. But, I think the form is brilliant. I think what we have got to remember is, you know, we are competing against, you know, an unbelievable City, not just a side, but an unbelievable squad. And for us to be, you know, neck and neck with them at the minute, is, I think that just speaks volumes for the class and quality that we've got as well.
Good, man, I have to tell you. Yes, I think it's been fantastic to be back here. Amazing, the crowd once again showing up for this amazing cause and helping to the foundation. And, well, we enjoy a great game against one of our probably more difficult opponents, and we got a history with them, and we enjoyed a great moment. It has to be like this. It's like a fairy tale. It has to have a happy ending, and for us, it's seeing Stevie scoring the third one is like the perfect moment to finish the game.
And Lewis, sorry, have you just come out? You've come back to Liverpool a few times now. Have you noticed a difference in the fans in the city? Everybody's a bit more excited now. This big title chase. Have you really noticed it?
No, I think it's always there. I mean, it's true that now the league is closer. We can smell the silver. Well, of course, the people is very excited, and people is a little bit happier. But at the end, I think the passion for football and for Liverpool has been always there. Every time we come here, we saw it. You can see a Legends game with 55,000 people here, and it's been like this the last 3 years. So we are just happy that they can enjoy a good moment, because they deserve it.
And you were lucky enough to win the Champions League for Liverpool, didn't quite make it with the title. How do you feel Liverpool's chances are now, potentially with both? Or what do you think Liverpool will, do you think they're going to try and get this title? Is probably the priority. How do you think Liverpool are going to do in that battle with City?
No, I think the most important, I mean, you cannot, when you play for Liverpool, you have to win. You have to try to win every single game and try to win all the trophies. At the moment, you have two. So it's going game by game. It's not about no, we have to give priority to Premier League or Champions League. It's about trying to win the games.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, yeah. You just mentioned there, but obviously being here is one thing. You know, there are a couple of lads who have slipped out the pecking order and not playing, so I found myself lucky, and I was just honoured to them, you know, to experience it again, because it is an amazing experience to run out in front of a packed house in Anfield. It's something dreams are made of. The Legends games have obviously got bigger and bigger over the probably the last 4 or 5 years. You know, we played Real Madrid in the Bernabeu, we played Bayern Munich here, obviously AC Milan, so we're coming up against, you know, all these legendary players. But, you know, the level is age and healthy living. So yeah, but I mean, they're still really class when they're on the pitch. You know, the decision making and the movement's really great. They just can't get there sometimes.
Just one thing, and Gio, you were on off the ball earlier in the week, and Mr. Kevin Kilbane maybe took the piss a little bit over your routine. But just how did the body hold up there, being back out in Anfield? Must have felt great, did it? How are you feeling now?
I think the adrenaline's what keeps you through it. We're intact, and obviously looking forward to the Sean Cox game. You know, obviously it's been a bit slow with the Sean Cox game because we've had this, and the FAI and obviously Ireland have had today. But once now these are out the way, certainly our game, you know, the focus and the emphasis now is on Sean Cox and Ireland. We want to fill the ground. We want as many people to turn up. Like today, you know, the more people turn up, the more money we raise. And it's Sean that benefits, and hopefully his rehabilitation can benefit from the money we raise. So, you know, it's just, you know, the push is on now. Hopefully people turn up.
Absolutely. And the one thing we both really want is hopefully there might be a 50-50 ball between yourself and Kev on the pitch. That could be fun to watch.
There's only one winner there, mate. Only one winner.
All right. That is a medley of Liverpool legends, including Robbie Fowler, Luis Garcia in there as well. And of course, at the beginning, Sammy Hupia. Yeah, as you said, enjoyable game. Now, somehow the first half, after all those minutes have passed, including playing the 5 minutes of audio you sent in, we're still not at halftime, despite the fact we were actually at minute 40 when we started the show. So Ireland still leading 1-0 against Georgia. Time works very differently on Team 33, so this is definitely live or pre-recorded and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, look, have you been keeping an eye on some of the international games before we actually get to Ireland and the situation
here? I've been keeping an eye on England.
Yeah. Someone in the office said they're likely to win a trophy in the next 10 years. Well, I would still...
Maybe they're close to the last.
That's a bit playing it safe, to be
honest.
I would have my doubts.
Not optimistic.
Actually England.
Gary Lineker was tweeting the same fact, saying that I think that he's like, whisper it, but I think this English team will win something.
Absolutely, they seem to have a bit of...
Euro 2020, the semi-finals and final are in Wembley.
Yeah.
And the group stage as well. I think England have two home games if they qualify. To be honest, they will qualify. They've already scored 10 goals.
The only thing I would say is that we've often seen England do very well in qualification and then obviously fail in the tournament. But this seems to be a bit different.
There is a difference here, isn't there?
Yeah, they're backing it up.
They are.
It's coming off the back of an excellent Nations League and an even better World Cup. So,
and because I think by and large, international football has kind of mellowed a little bit in the last couple of years. You don't really have it doesn't seem to have the powerhouses, don't seem to be as dominant. There's definitely a freshness.
Well, it is going through a bit of a kind of phase where kind of anyone can win it. Or there's certain, like, you know, you go into the World Cup and you always have the 7 or 8 teams that could win it. But they're for, say, 2010 and 2014, even though, well, say for 08, 2010 and 2012, there was a feeling that Spain were a fair bit ahead of everybody else, and since they've gone, nobody has really stepped into the vacuum, because you never felt that Germany were unbeatable. And then in 2018, like 2016, you had Portugal winning it. 2018, okay, the French team is excellent, but
they played in such a reserved way as well. They didn't blow everyone apart.
And that's the most impressive thing about England at the moment, is the fact that, I mean, they beat Czech Republic 5-0, World Cup runners up.
Yeah,
and it's just a
World Cup runners. What am I talking, Croatia? Well, but they beat Czech Republic 5-0, which is and then followed up with a 5-1 win against Montenegro.
It's just the freshness, really.
World football powerhouses, some would say.
It's more than just
Czech
the performances.
Republic are all, you know, you'd regard
Czech Republic were decent back in the 90s, early 2000s.
They're
nowhere near that level.
No, but it's still impressive to score 10 goals in two qualifying matches.
It is. And the way they did it, and like you've got someone like Raheem Sterling, who's obviously on fire at the moment. And Harry Kane is Harry Kane. You know, you've got a lot of players playing very well for the clubs and transferring that to their country, which they haven't done for a very long time.
If you're talking about a player that's actually grown on and off the pitch, Sterling, like there's no way any of the newspapers, who I won't bother naming, will be able to have a go at him.
Thought when he left Liverpool and I went to City that he was kind of this player who had a lot of potential, but even over the last few years hasn't really reached the potential that he could have. And now this season, he's very much showing that. I think Pep Guardiola, people like slag off Pep an awful lot because he's only managed the top clubs, the Bayern Munich, Barcelona, obviously Manchester City, a lot of money there. But he does make some very good players better. And Pep and Raheem Sterling is certainly one of those players that he's made better at England, at Man City.
Derek, just to go back to our earlier conversation, where do you stand so on tennis ball protests?
Where do I stand on tennis ball protests? I'm not, that's my point. I'm a bit torn about this because... Where else do you make a statement like this? Where else do you make a protest like this? Only in the stadium. But at the same time, you are going to affect the team's performance. And if you want the team to, you know what I mean? Yeah. So there's this kind of, I'm a little bit torn about how I feel about it. Like James McLean came out and he said that it's ridiculous, don't do it. Obviously, Mick McCarthy said the same thing. And you can see why they're maybe saying that. I'm a bit torn because it's obviously going to affect the Irish performance, you would think, but at the same time, where else are you going to protest?
And it happened in the 33rd minute, which obviously means a lot to obviously, our show, of course, as Team 33.
Was there Team 33 sponsored our logo tennis balls?
Why can't we be the 33rd team?
Which is obviously one of the areas John Delaney had involved himself in, trying to get us into that World Cup as a 33rd team.
I'm a big supporter of boycotting things because the word boycott comes from Castlebar.
I'd always knew you got a Mayo twist in it.
Captain Charles Boycott, back in the land wars.
So you support this then?
I think that...
Well, just because your man's from...
No, obviously. I think that when it comes to protesting, there is always an alternative going, if you do this, you're damaging such and such. But at the end of the day, nothing is ever achieved
without
a protest. I mean, if the goal is to have, you know, reform of the way the FAI does things, it won't be achieved with everyone saying nothing about it.
And you think about every protest that happens within football, and this is tennis balls have happened before, of course, they garner kind of world attention. So the only way you're going to get world attention is to do something.
Well, this game has been broadcast on Sky Sports, I presume, is it?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, evidently the tennis balls start coming onto the pitch, anyone watching goes, oh, what's this about? I think it started off in, the tennis ball thing comes from like Switzerland or something, like a Swiss game that they started throwing tennis balls, and it's moved on to
Swiss.
I know the Germans have really taken it under the wing, haven't they? Particularly ticket prices.
I mean, it's an easy thing because at least if you throw a tennis ball onto the pitch, you're not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah. I think the John Delaney news has been on Sky News in the past few days. Apparently it led the Sky News sports bulletin a few days ago, which I was surprised about because I didn't really think it would be that big a news across the water, but it has been. So I think it's known, and certainly this will add to it if obviously these fans feel that they want to get that message across that they're unhappy with the FAI. That's probably a decent way to do it rather than boycotting the game, like I say, and not going at all, which doesn't really send any message across.
You're hurting yourself as well because I'm sure most of them are supportive.
And it's kind of it's well hidden. The FAI could easily, you know, move seats around to make it look like it's full when it's not, all that kind of thing.
You've seen like the other probably way of kind of voicing your displeasure really is in the form, written form in banners, and there's been such a proactive and a heavy armed and a very much we've seen it in away games as well where it's been planned in advance to look out for these things and to stop these things being visible at games. So, you know, even from a logistics point of view, trying to get a tennis ball into a game or whatever is a little bit easier. And yeah, I'm a little bit torn as well, I have to say. I don't really like the whole idea of disruption, particularly to the team, because it's the last thing they really need at the moment. But I think it's been so big what has happened, and I feel there's been such a disconnect really from general football supporters compared to what is going on, and I feel there has to be some form of displeasure shown, and if that's the way it's going to do it, like the score of the free kick directly afterwards, so it hasn't impacted the team yet, so we'll see what happens.
You say that it's easier to get tennis balls in, and you're right, compared to a massive banner, but they seem to get a lot of tennis balls in. I'm surprised they got that many in.
We must, Raf, as an aside, just on, because we're speaking of protests, we must do a segment on Blackpool at some stage. Now that there was a club that had, you know, like that was fan, like a division between fans, and that fans.
That went down quite a long time.
Yeah, a long time where fans just weren't going
like 4 years, I think.
And they weren't going to watch the club. Yeah. So it'd just be interesting to talk about that whole thing of, and this is us having a production meeting on the air, but speaking about the whole thing of division, I mean, you know, feeling so strongly about the direction things are going that you actually stop going to watch your team, because that is probably the most difficult thing a supporter can do.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about that, you're talking about Manchester United and the City of Manchester. What's the club called? FC United of Manchester.
FC United, that was
of
it.
Manchester.
Yeah, of Manchester.
Yeah, and who they said about, obviously a completely different club and completely boycotted the club because of the whole Glazer thing, and that's still going, obviously, and it's doing quite well for what it is.
It is, but the thing about the other thing about the Glazer thing is, like, you know, you forget it. Like, obviously, it was very controversial at the time, but the way they're run at the moment, Manchester City, is not all that different from most. Certainly, when you look at other English clubs, it's not really all that different from other English clubs anymore.
You mean United?
Yeah, like when it happened with the Glazers, because the club seemed to be quite leveraged, it was quite controversial. But since then, so many clubs have been bought out in different ways by some chairman that are exposing the club to more risks, clubs to more risks than others. That it's amazing that, like, say in other clubs, they just typical. I mean, if you're talking about Newcastle, where the complaints are that not enough money is going into the club. To be honest, same thing with Arsenal, not enough money going in because of the way the owners are. The way the owners feel about how things should be run, it's interesting that has become the norm when what happened with United and the Glazers was quite unique.
Yeah, at the time.
The other one that comes into mind, again, is from a Liverpool point of view, was back in 2016 when FSG at the time were looking to increase the price of tickets, and the top price of a ticket was going to be £77, which is an insane amount for a game of football. But that's a different day's
but
discussion.
Liverpool had the same issue with their own.
They did, and there was a big protest in the game against Sutherland. A lot of people, I think up to 10,000 people, left on the 77th minute as a huge mark of protest. One of the unique occasion, one of the first times that this has happened at Anfield, and Liverpool were 2-0 up at the time, and Sutherland come back to 2-2 in pretty much an empty stadium. So the board soon realised straight away the power of the fans, and it was a case of where, classic example, nobody likes doing it to your own team, but there's sometimes you have to say enough is enough, and it goes back to tonight as well. Sometimes you just can't keep taking it the whole time. You've got to put the foot down
short-term pain for long-term
and show the displeasure. Otherwise, people just go on because they can get away with it the whole time.
I guess it's not worked that way from United point of view, as far as United have just grown under the Glazers and grown since David Gill's even stepped down and Ed Woodward stepped into the role. So United's worst form for the last 20 years on the pitch has actually been
commercially
United's
booming.
best form off the pitch.
I think what happened with United was more so it was one of the first clubs in England where we saw this happening, so it led to a certain type of reaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'd be interested to find out where FC United are in terms of the fans who set it up.
What a huge step it is to take to not only boycott your club, but support it from afar and know one day you probably will go back to it once everything's sorted out with ownership issues and whatnot. But to actually set up a new club and to stop supporting the club you supported all your life and start supporting this completely new club in the Premier Division North or whatever it was way down the leagues. That's a massive step. So fair play to anyone who did that for United or who does that in general, because it's different from our point of view, but over in England, supporting a football club can be your life. You go there every single week.
Exactly.
It's the only thing maybe you spend money on every Saturday is going to Old Trafford, Anfield, wherever, and supporting your club. And to stop doing that is a big life-changing thing, rather than even that, in Ireland where you just maybe don't go to as many games as you'd like
even
to go to.
Even think of that Sunderland Till I Die documentary. I don't know if you watched it, but their club is suffering two relegations in a row. Everything is quite depressing around the place, yet these people still seem to be drawn to go there despite the problems. Yeah,
one of the scenes is just the ticket office just not being smashed out of it, but quite a number of people, a volume of people coming in were renewing their season tickets. Yeah, I guess it's an addiction, really, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. But these people go; it's their life.
Yeah, it's more tribal, isn't it?
They go on a Saturday to the game. They don't care what. Well, they obviously care, but they're still going to go no matter what division they're in and how they're doing. They still go every Saturday. And if they don't go, there's something missing in their lives. And it's very different from an Irish point of view because, for most Irish fans, they don't get to go regularly to games as much as they would like to do.
It'd be like if you were boycotting
Mayo.
For me, it'd be like if I was boycotting Mayo.
Exactly, during the whole summer. And
I obviously am not.
Sorry, so you're bringing your tennis balls to the league final now?
Well, we've nothing to protest about, except the team being great at the moment, Nothing to protest about that. I'm still waiting for the Mayo loving rap, Well, we spend about 10 minutes talking about how...
Let's have a little GA segue now in the middle of it.
I just want to finish
Why
up.
Not?
I just want to finish up what I was saying.
So you're turning down a Mayo show? You're turning your county down?
Just to stay on the point, the one thing about the FC United is that Salford City have completely eclipsed them in the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that... that period where FC United came along was an interesting period, that you had AFC Wimbledon coming along as well, but they have been much more successful in terms of making an impact in league football, moving up through the pyramid than FC United have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, guy. You asked for it.
Ah, no, it's okay.
Well, you're in a league where both our counties are in league finals.
Are you going?
I bought my ticket there.
Raf's first day in Crow Park. On the Raf.
It'll be good. It's a good Saturday.
I was at the match on Sunday and checking. It was great fun, actually, and it just goes to show as well that particularly if your football team, particularly in England when there's a lot going on the last day of the season, between all the different leagues, when you're involved watching it on Sky, but when you're actually at the ground, it's a different thing altogether, because like that's the great thing about the GAA league, in that, you know,
a lot can happen in the last day.
Yeah, we were watching the game in McHale Park and you're getting people to, there's people beside you saying, oh, Galway are 4-0.
It was looking so good up to half time.
Galway are 7-0, and then I was texting one of my friends and he's saying, yeah, they're 7-0, I'm watching here, but there's a massively strong breeze. And then like 5 minutes into the second half, like Mayo were going really well. And then, Raph, what are you doing?
Sorry, I'm actually working at the same time as I'm presenting the show. God. Yeah, so a lot of off the ball audio suddenly seems to be springing up from my phone as I'm working away. But I can, what's that? Multitask, that's the word.
It's going well so far.
But and there's people there with the radio stuck up to their ear and everything. It's fantastic. And it just goes to show.
Are you going to go to the hurling on Sunday?
And the football?
Yeah, the hurling. What's
hurling's at 2 and football's at 4.
And there's something before that. Is it the camogie? Camogie's before that.
Yeah,
are you going to go to the camogie and the hurling?
Unfortunately, I can't make the final on Sunday. I can't believe it.
What?
No.
When's the last time Mayo won a league?
2001.
Okay.
So the reason I can't.
Did you remember? Were you at that?
No, I wasn't. That was family. That was family.
So you've never seen Mayo win a national title?
No. I remember watching, I was watching it on TV, but the reason I can't go to the final is that about 6 months ago, we arranged that my fiancé's parents, they're staying the night in Mayo, and we'd arranged that they'd meet my parents for the first time. So they're meeting them in Castlebar on Sunday morning. So obviously myself and Claire are going home because... But
Not be moved for the special occasion? I'm sure they'd understand.
No, because
bring them to the match.
They're booked into a hotel, so they're going to be down in Mayo. So it wouldn't make sense for them not to meet each other. In fairness, Claire had said to me, it's completely your choice if you want to stay and go. Because I had talked to her about this before. I was like, you know, Mayo might actually make the final now.
This is happening on the radio, isn't it?
No, that's really bad planning on your part.
Well, to be honest, when this happened 6 months ago, I remember coming up and I was like, Mayo, they'll never make the league final, because to be honest, we know Mayo, if they avoid relegation, it's a good campaign. And sure, here we are now and I'm like, oh.
They're probably going to win it now.
So I made the call that, in fairness, if ever there was an occasion that family would have to come first, this was the occasion. So I'll be missing out on the league. I'll be watching it on TV. But the other thing is, I'll be watching it with my father, so I can... he'll probably be watching it in rage, because that's the way he usually watches his Mayo matches. And
is there any other way?
And I can try and calm him while he's watching it, you know.
Yeah, well, the fathers are always the ones you end up watching sports with. Generally, even when I'm in working here, if there's a match on, regardless if it's football or whatever, I usually get a text or I send one to me, out, lad. It's just
sure,
a tradition.
It's
one of those
that's
things.
That's what it's about. I mean,
who's going on Saturday, Raph?
In regards to...
All the Diallos?
No. Nobody, none of the Diallo ranch that are actually in Leitrim
are coming
down.
Do they have any heat on GAA?
They'd watch All Ireland's and stuff,
they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, but Leitrim GAA.
All the Leitrim All
No, our county don't care.
Were they in Croke Park in 1994?
No, sure. We only moved to Ireland in 1993, so I think the only GAA had actually...
GAA was definitely a new thing at that
stage. No, like the first All-Ireland I watched was 96.
Okay.
Which obviously...
Oh, Mayo.
Yeah, that one. So I have always had a soft spot for Mayo from then, and I actually didn't like Meath for years. And I have no problem with the county. I was there about 2 months ago, and there are nice people, and it's a great place, great spot. So let's just put that out there.
But tell me this, are you going to Croke Park with somebody who has been before or knows Croke Park?
No.
Oh.
Raph, but no, but I've been in it.
I know, but you've never made a game. That's
have you got your ticket yet?
Yeah.
Where are you sitting?
Hogan Stand.
Oh, Jesus. Are you hanging about for the...
No. I'm going to that one game and then I'm going to go.
In fairness, I agree.
Raph!
Ah, no. Like, I mean, I agree.
I don't care about other counties.
So, you go to games just to watch games.
I'm only going to watch Leitrim.
Nobody wants to sit in Croke Park for 4 hours. Well, some people do, but
I would love it.
I can think of nothing worse than sitting in Croke Park for 4 hours.
Watching a good game of football.
Watching a good game of football is enjoyable. But but the problem is that, like, oftentimes I find, unless you're the big game of the day, there's people moving in and out, and because they're all kind of half watching it, other than the ones, you know. If you're the big game of the day, though, everybody stays to watch.
I'm there for the day.
All for the occasion. I'm with you.
I'm there for the day.
But I've a good feeling. I think Mayo are going to win. I'm very confident.
I have a gut feeling based on the previous match that we played against this particular county, Derry, in the league, that we are not going to win. We lost them already, so
well, let's wait and see.
And
well, look, you never know. But
Raph, you cannot leave to go in before full time.
Oh, Jesus, I won't be doing Raph. That.
Well, just
why would I do that?
Well, if you're 10 points down,
five minutes to go. I'll stay for the whole thing. Like, it's the only time Leitrim are going to be in Croke Park for maybe another few years.
A year or two.
Well, at least, yeah. If we're in the Division 3 final at some point, maybe. But
you need to enjoy. Croke Park is the best stadium in the world. You need to enjoy it when you're there. It is the best stadium.
Well, it's full.
Oh, it is. It's the best.
But when it's not full, though, it's...
Oh, absolutely. But, Saturday might be different. But, like, I've been there for numerous Ireland finals.
Why would it be different? Why would a county of 25,000...
No, because it won't be as big a crowd
not,
there. And I've been,
not actually fill out the stadium.
I've been in Croke Park several times where it's quite quiet and it can be a bit... Yeah. Like any stadium in the world, if it's not packed, it can
to
be...
To be honest, when it's Mayo v Dublin and it's neck and neck coming down the home straight, it's pretty...
Absolutely, but I've been... Yeah, all Ireland finals, Mayo, Dublin, I've been in... And it's just the best stadium in the world. So you need to enjoy it on Saturday and report back to
us. What's the best atmosphere you've been in any stadium? Not just Croker.
Oh, I could. Can I go first?
Yes,
I'll go first because I've been to a lot of sporting occasions. Admittedly, not as many massive soccer occasions. I was in the Aviva for Ireland Germany.
I was there for that.
That was quite
by
good.
Far the most amazing sporting occasion I ever witnessed in person was Mayo versus Dublin All Ireland semi final 2006. Unbelievable.
I remember and that game. Actually. Is that the one where they were
the one
Mayo,
where Kieran MacDonald got the winning point with 3 minutes to go after Mayo.
And there was a Hill 16 incident or something as well.
It was insane. Oh, yeah. And Mayo, like, Mayo would have to win the All Ireland in dramatic circumstances nearly for it to be topped. Because while if Mayo won in All Ireland, the last couple of minutes after they won would be insane. For watching a game like that in terms of spectacle and the back and forth nature of it, I'll be surprised if it's ever topped.
For me, in Croke Park is the 2014 All Ireland hurling final, the drawn game where Tipperary player had a chance to win the game in the 74th minute, and everyone thought he pointed it. Bubbles O'Dwyer, I think it was, and it went to the Hawkeye, and everyone thought that this point was over the bar, and Hawkeye ruled it out as wide, and the game blew up, and it was just because the game was a draw. But I was just jumping around and it's mad because Kilkenny didn't win the game. I'm a Kilkenny fan. Yeah. Kilkenny didn't win that game, but still, it was an incredible moment where the whole 80,000 people were looking at a screen for it to say Neil, and it was wide, and the game went to a replay, which Kilkenny won. But I was also at a the equivalent of the Europa League final in South America, Independiente played it.
Oh, I think you told us the story.
In Buenos Aires.
Really? Okay.
Oh, and it was incredible. In terms of an atmosphere of a game that I wouldn't know, I didn't know a whole lot about who was playing. It was their Europa League final or semi-final equivalent.
I think, did you say there was a bit of an edge to the place as well?
Like, oh, absolutely.
It was just, like, you couldn't exactly be wearing certain jerseys.
My mate
areas.
Was wearing blue and yellow, which is the Boca Juniors colours. He didn't know that. And everyone was looking at him walking into the stadium, walking down the street. And he was like, why is everyone looking at me? Because he had to turn his T-shirt inside out because people said to him, you're going to get beaten up here if you don't. But the atmosphere is incredible. Independiente's stadium was being rebuilt at the time or had been just rebuilt. So it was very new. And the stadium was actually bouncing. People were jumping for the whole 90 minutes. They ended up winning the game 1-0 from what I remember, or maybe 2-1, something like that. But it was just incredible. And there's still a big banner there that said Cun in favour of...
I thought you were about to say something else, but anyway, go on.
In favour of Aguero, obviously, Cun Aguero.
Yeah.
And that was in 2010, so he'd long gone from Independiente at that stage. There's still a big banner that said that was... bigging him up, but the place was just actually bouncing. It was kind of slightly scary because it was still a slightly new stadium and there were people there who didn't watch 1 minute of the game. Literally they were facing us for the whole game, handing us around a bottle of Coke, which we drank out of. I'm not sure if we should have known or not, but we did, and we survived to tell the tale. But people didn't watch. There were people there and their whole job was literally staring at us for the whole game and getting us jumping up and down. It was an incredible atmosphere.
What about yourself, John?
You weren't in Istanbul.
I wasn't, but
Anfield has had so many European nights games.
I'll go actually in reverse order. Second one for me, I've been lucky enough to have been a lot of big sporting occasions at a Champions League final, which didn't end too well last season, but it was still a remarkable atmosphere, a remarkable occasion. There's been some big games at Croker. I think even from an Irish football point of view, it's the Germany game. That's the best I've heard at Lansdowne.
Yeah,
I remember
great.
Even Walters winning a corner in the far corner afterwards, 1-0. and towards the end, and the roar that I've heard for that, for winning like celebrating a corner was incredible.
And I think it was just the way the goal came about, and
Shane Long. I remember I was behind the goal at the singing section, and I remember I could see, it was one of those moments where you can just see kind of
the time happening.
And it happening. I could see the ball coming from Randolph, and I said, I remember grabbing my mate at the time and said, look, this is, watch this. You could just see it, and the ball just landed, and he just hit it perfectly long, and pretty much came through. That was an incredible occasion. One actually that comes into my head, it's 2017 All-Ireland Hurling semi-final, Galway and Tipperary. Galway and Tipperary, huge number of battles over the years that have kind of gone either way, that have been some incredible occasions. But that was one where it was just one of these mental hell for leather games. Joe Cannon pretty much scored the winner right at the end. I think he was pretty much halfway up the Cusick stand when he hit the last point. He was that far on the sideline, and it came over, and it was just an absolutely insane sporting occasion. I remember I had a couple of mates over from England at the time, and I brought them to the game, and they just couldn't get over. They'd never seen, like, one of the things they couldn't really get over was, and Derek, you kind of touched on it there, but what's so unique to Irish sport is the fact that fans intermix so closely. And I remember there was a big bunch of Tipperary lads in front of me, and they were going hell for leather, and then we were going hell for leather and forth, and it was just remarkable. And
I remember when AIB did that thing for the football with
Cammy, was it?
Chris Kamara and
Jeff Stelling.
Jeff Stelling, that was the big thing that they remarked upon, that everyone
that crowd
was just standing beside each other.
Because you can't really do that in most stadiums.
Particularly when a game is so intense and they're so physical, so many altercations.
And there's very little. There's a bit of shouting sometimes. There's a bit of banter and shouting sometimes, but I've never seen it get physical at Croke Park.
I mean, like, I've friends who have gone to Spurs, Liverpool matches and the likes, that, you know, I've one friend who's a Spurs fan who ended up in with all the Liverpool fans at Anfield for a Spurs match. And what, he's scared? I couldn't really, and Spurs actually scored a last minute winner. But he's like, I couldn't really celebrate. But he's like, but you know, like, he can be done. Like, no, that, like, the only time I've seen issue is that I saw an issue there last year at West Ham, where there was a rival fan in with the home fans and they were giving him real a lot of grief and he got thrown out. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I mean, even I was watching when Arsenal were playing Spurs a few weeks back at Wembley, and Arsenal scored first. And I was watching the reaction of the Arsenal fans, and they literally all just turned and started making various gestures at the Spurs fans. It's such bizarre behaviour.
It's pettiness, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Bit,
I mean, that's what. Yeah.
Does that, like, for yourself though? What would be, if you had to pick other than?
So that's number two. Number one for me is the Champions League semi-final first leg from last season, Liverpool Roma. An occasion that started, like, literally, I remember we pretty much all the fans gathered at the ground, literally like from 1 or 2 o'clock in the day. And it was non-stop singing, chanting all day long. The place was thronged, meeting the buses and the teams coming in. And then the atmosphere that I've heard, I was lucky enough to be stood in the cop. And it was just, even thinking now, I'm getting goosebumps thinking back of it. The noise was absolutely insane. And Roma were just ripped apart. Like, Liverpool went 5-0 up. It could have been 10-0 up.
Yeah.
From a football point of view, like, everyone talks about Liverpool playing heavy metal football on 100 miles an hour. Well, that was it. If you could bottle it, that was it, really, in terms of just non-stop aggressive. And it was one of those occasions where the crowd, the players, everyone was just one unifying force. And they talk about it. And it's even interesting, I've heard like a long interview with Alisson Dunn, and, you know, he was playing for Roma that night. And, you know, he speaks about it, even how he doesn't really get affected by the atmosphere, but that was just gone. And like,
because I often find after you go to a game and you come out, and particularly obviously if it's an intense close game, you feel a couple hours later you absolutely feel exhausted afterwards.
Oh yeah, no, that was one of those occasions. As I said, it was from non-stop singing from about 2 o'clock in the day to that occasion as Ireland go 2-0 up. Is there a flag? Almost Hendrick 2-2, but yeah, no, that for me was the biggest. Like, I've been lucky enough to be been at derbies or whatever at Anfield. They've been great occasions, but that for me was that night.
I always remember, you're talking about in Croke Park and sitting beside rival fans, and we do. I remember sitting beside a Cork fan during the All-Ireland final 2004, Cork v Kilkenny, And we were getting on, myself and this girl from Cork, and we were getting on great in the first half because it was a real tight game. Yeah. Cork ended up steamrolling Kilkenny second half. Like, Kilkenny scored about 1 point in the second half and Cork won by about 10 points. And gradually, I got more and more pissed off. By the end, I didn't even talk to her. And it was completely me. She was as pleasant about by the end as she was at the start. But I was getting more and more grumpy as Cork were running away with the game. And by the end, I just think I just walked off and didn't say anything to her. Me being completely rude. It was all me. She was very pleasant.
I do prefer when you are in with a group of your own supporters.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't mind a bit of banter as long as it's all...
Yeah, there's nothing worse than... Well, all I find is there's nothing worse than when you're following a team. Like, I particularly look, it's nothing worse than a supporter who can never see past their own team. So, like, if their player goes down, it's definitely a foul, or that there's no chance that they could have dived, or likewise, if it's opposing, that the referee is out to get them and all that. You know,
have you stood beside some Mayo fans by any chance?
or are you listening to yourself?
I always think I'm pretty measured when it comes to seeing my own team's failings. I have to say, but like every county. I think there's plenty of supporters out there from all counties that somehow cannot see past the
end of their own nose. Yeah.
Think their own team are always the ones been done out.
So, Raph, don't get too rowdy on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I won't.
Don't you get kicked out of Croker on your first day there.
Do you think that, do you ever find that, watching it on TV versus being at the game?
Oh, for it being at the game for me.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
I think it's one.
TV has its benefits in that you're getting the running commentary.
It depends on the game, but like certainly if it's a massive game, I love watching it back on TV because you see it completely differently. Being at a game like an All Ireland final or a massive game like that,
I have this recurring nightmare, and I've actually had it a fair few times that Mayo are in the All Ireland final, and for some reason I can't get a ticket. I've had that a few times now. Must be a subconscious nightmare that keeps.
Don't organise any family event for the last August. First Sunday in September.
That's the one thing, see, I never do that.
That's optimistic.
I always need my All-Ireland final Sunday free.
Okay.
Or the week after as well,
As we've seen in the last couple of years, that's very important.
Yeah, well, my one, just to finish off, would be Sevilla Sporting Gijón, 4-3 back in, I'm going to say September 08, so just after I'd moved. So we went to a few games, and it was just unbelievable atmosphere as well. It's probably one of the better atmosphere in Spain. Not that I actually tasted any of the other ones. The Sanchez-Pizjuán Stadium.
Yeah, I think we had a comment, because I remember talking on this about being at Barcelona, and like obviously it's all got to do what type of game you go to. Like, I mean, I'm sure we've all been to plenty of Ireland matches. Like, what did I go to recently? Was it Moldova a couple of years ago in the qualifiers for the World Cup where they won 2-0? And like, obviously because it's a nothing game really, most people seem to be more obsessed with going in and out to the bar to get a drink.
And the same, and a bit like being to Old Trafford, sorry to interrupt, being at Old Trafford, and you're kind of like, it's great to be there and I love going to Old Trafford, but I've never been at a game at Old Trafford where I'm like, that was incredible. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was just like, it was great to be there and I love it, but I've never been at a game at Old Trafford where...
I think you actually need to go, for that, you need to go to like a Champions League
knockout, like something like that,
because, or like you need to go to United City games.
Absolutely. I think, and just get lucky. I mean, there's been plenty of United City games which are... equally as boring, but if you got to go to the 4-3 a few years ago or something like that, it'd be incredible. Yeah. Like I said, I've never been to a game like that at Old Trafford where you come out of it going, wow. It was like great to be there, but not a game.
And I think if you're going to a game like, I don't know, like say for argument's sake, you're going to Arsenal versus Brighton. I mean, there is an element of, a bit of a tourist element to it where there's probably...
Unless Arsenal come back in the last minute and score two goals. But even still, it's unlikely to have been a thriller.
Yeah, what you need there, you need to be there at the big matches. And like for people going, like, you know, it can be hard to get tickets, but definitely Spurs being in Wembley offered an opportunity to all to go and see some of the big games when there was 90,000 tickets there for sale.
Quick point on Spurs' new stadium. I know we have to finish up soon. Looks class.
Ah, yeah.
Looks great.
Sure, like every other new stadium.
No, but it actually looks slightly different and looks class.
They have the way
they have their stand, the kind of terrace end, I guess you call it, and their stand, kind of, there's a nice mix between them. It looks really good.
As new stadiums go, it is quite impressive.
It's different to the usual, the bland stadium that we've seen.
They have thought about acoustics seemingly
and there's a lot of new stadia that look the exact same, they're just a bowl. It's just red seats or white seats or whatever, but this looks slightly different, so it looks pretty cool.
Well, I think the fact that they've gone after that, they've really concentrated on the acoustics and all that stuff, very important. And like, I think when you're building a new stadium, being close to the pitch is so important as well.
compared to West Ham's. Which,
oh well, sure they could. Well, they got that
running tracks just ruined football stadiums.
To do, and like they, I mean, it took them a long time to figure that out in Italy.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I suppose time will tell what the new, like, it'll be interesting to see how, like, the new White Hart Lane looks, you know. I have to say, yeah, it looks immense.
I think it'll prove
it just how it reacts on match day or whatever.
Strongly of the view it'll prove to be a massive hindrance for the run-in this season.
It's a strange time.
Movement. I think it's bonkers.
Like, they're probably looking
The only thing is it'll probably be a kick the first few games because it's a new stadium and stuff, but maybe by the end it might affect
them.
Well,
there's not many games left, but
it is a risk to take.
If you're going on the law of averages, most clubs find it difficult in the first few games. And they move. Like, I mean, it sounds like Arsenal, Highbury became, or not Highbury, but the Emirates became a fortress straight away. It takes a bit of time to bed in. Because to be honest with you, I think when you start playing in a new stadium first, it's like playing at a neutral venue.
No, it definitely is, because there's a whole acclimatization really to be done. But like what I find looking forward to, or kind of very, very curious about, is what sort of pre-match entertainment or whatever they have in mind for the Man City Champions League tie, because they have to go all out for that. It's going to be the first big night here. We've seen a lot of, like Wolves especially, have really got into Southampton, have done it a bit. You even see it a bit at Chelsea as well, even at Celtic as well, actually, more and more teams are coming into my head of these turn off the lights and light displays and whatnot.
Celtic.
And the
call famously discussed about that.
The disco machine there, or whatever.
I think we've shown that there was something about that. It wasn't just... We discussed this on the show.
Yeah.
That they didn't spend all the money on lights or something. There was something more to it than that. It was,
But there was no players, most importantly, particularly for Arinda here, was quite irate about that. But yeah, no, you would be curious to see what they have in mind, because you'd imagine that they would have something in mind for such a big event for them in one of the first. And, you know, look, I wish them well. I hope it works out well.
Be because that's going to be cracking Champions League tie. You'd have to say can only see.
I'd have rather, and it may be obviously later on in the tournament, but I would have rather United play Spurs, because I think that would have been a more even tie, and City versus Barcelona would have been two cracking ties.
I would have loved if United got Liverpool.
Oh yeah, no, but in terms of actual the same level. You know what I mean? You look at Spurs and United, I don't think are too far apart. And City-Barcelona would be an incredible tie as well.
I have a feeling that City will beat Spurs comfortably.
So do I. And I think Barcelona will beat United comfortably. And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But we'll wait and see.
We'll wait and see.
Yeah, we certainly will. Anyway, that's it for this week's show. Hopefully, I'd say for the Friday show, we may have Sid Lowe. He's in town on Wednesday, as I said. So, Guardian football writer. His Spanish pieces are always worth reading. But anyway, Joe Coffey, thanks for coming
in. Raf, pleasure as always.
Derek Ryan.
Thank you, Raf.
And Jonathan Higgins.
Thank you very much, Raf.
Take it away, Johan.